Welcome to Female Future, a podcast about female icons, trendsetters, and pioneers. Throughout history, women changed the world, and they continue to do so today, but too often we don't hear about it. Many women's stories go untold, their voices are unheard, and their impact is overlooked. This is a podcast exploring the achievements of women who have helped to shape society in arts, politics, science, and innovation. My name is Yvonne Eisenring, and I'm a Swiss writer and talk show host. And for this podcast series, I will talk to women from Switzerland, the UK, and Israel. And this episode is about femtech, and my guests are two women who are experts in this field. I'm very excited to welcome Kelly Viro and Maria Butkovic. Thank you so much for being here.
Yay! What a pleasure! Yay, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Maria Butkovic is a lawyer turned entrepreneur. She is an innovation and business consultant, and she's the founder and CEO of Women of Wearables, a global organization for women and allies in wearable tech, health tech, and femtech industry. And Maria is also writing for the Forbes Women division, and she lives in London. And Kelly Viro is was a game developer for 25 years and worked on some of the world's most famous franchises. She runs Core Game, a small digital agency specializing in gamification based in Zurich. And she sits on the advisory board at Femtech Lab in London. And I saw on your LinkedIn profile, Kelly, that it says you have been a narrative game designer since 1992 and a creative badass since 2017. And I was wondering what happened in 2017 that made you a creative badass.
I came to Zurich.
No way, that was the reason?
Yes. I had this amazing boss, and I needed to pivot really quickly out of games to work in Switzerland. And I had this really great boss, and he was like, "You can do so much stuff. You're a real creative badass." And I was like, "I'm taking that title." So that was my first few months in Switzerland and my first experience. Yeah.
So Switzerland made you a creative badass. Well, probably you
Absolutely.
Were that before, but no one told you.
Correct.
Well, I read a lot about you, articles and your biography, and you have so interesting careers, and there would be so many possibilities for topics, but I want to specifically talk about femtech in this episode. And therefore, maybe first, let's define femtech. Kelly, you're advising new femtech startups and projects, and I was wondering, what are they about? Or yeah, generally asking, what is femtech?
Femtech covers a multitude of health tech that is specifically focused on female problem solution situations. And it's opened up this entire new universe and horizon where now we're starting to focus on exactly how we can pinpoint and support women and female health topics within this sphere.
Will you add something, Maria, to that? Or what is your experience? Because your organization is helping and connecting women in this field.
I think that, you know, the rise of femtech happened not only because of the rise of technology, but also because women became much more aware about, you know, health issues, obstacles they face in the healthcare system. I wasn't actually that much passionate about femtech. I didn't even know what femtech is until I got pregnant in 2017 with my son and had a horrible experience with breastfeeding, and four different doctors misdiagnosed my breast abscess. So I actually became aware of the flaws and cracks in the healthcare system. And I started asking myself, well, you know, what if we wouldn't have to rely only on doctors? What if we could rely on technology to help us prevent different, you know, issues or challenges or diseases even, and even manage our chronic diseases better? And that's when I started researching more about, you know, female health, and I realized, wow, it's a massive, as Kelly said, you know, universe out there. And there's a massive business opportunity for companies to innovate in this space, because no one is doing that. No one is telling you about all the problems you could encounter as a new mom. And, you know, and obviously it goes beyond reproductive health. So I think it's very important to see femtech as a very holistic category that touches upon lives of not only females, but also everyone around them.
Can you give me a few examples? Like when you said like you had a son and then you realized, oh, we need like more technologies, or what are the examples for femtech?
Oh yeah, very, very basic ones, right? Like some examples might not even include technology, you know. As a mom, you no one tells you about, you know, what are the best breast pumps. Today we have a whole range of wearable breast pumps, right? No one tells you about the mental health challenges you'll have, and, you know, because of hormonal fluctuation and because you'll feel so alone and isolated. You know, my husband got back to work after 2 weeks and I stayed at home myself with the small baby. So, you know, there's a whole range of options today for women who might need a bit of a help with mental health. And also it goes beyond that, right? We have to talk about, you know, menstrual health. We have to talk about contraception. We have to talk about, you know, brain health as well in general. And oncology and, you know, reproductive health cancers is really, really important. And I spoke just the other day with someone who has a friend who got cancer during the pregnancy. So it's a very complex area, I would say. And technology can definitely help with that. But I think that the bottom line is there needs to be more research about female health in general. So I'm hoping that Femtech can fill that massive data gap that exists.
Would you say that that's like the biggest challenge?
I mean, I would say, you know, information, education, not only when it comes to women, but also healthcare professionals, lack of funding going to these new companies, lack of female investors who do actually understand femtech.
What's the reason for that? What's the reason for the lack of?
Kelly, what would you say? You're an angel investor. Like what? I have my theory about it, but what would you say?
I think one of the reasons is because traditionally women are not at the table. And I think because women are not at the table, we get information secondhand. So when I've worked with investors in the past or VCs, what I tend to get is they go into the boardroom and then they come out and say, oh yeah, you know, this excellent, amazing woman's health thing happened. And I say, what was it about? Tell me all about, oh, I don't know, I'll catch you up on it later by email. So I don't want to hear about it secondhand. And the problem is that unless there are women sat around the table, we're never going to get that firsthand information. And that's why, you know, we're kind of lacking. It's not that the money isn't there. The money is definitely there and it's going to the right places, but it needs to go to more places. And that requires a hive mind of strong, educated, informed women to support organizations and femtech startups around the world.
Correct. And if I may add, I think that women just need to be trusted more with money. I think, you know, yes, I love, you know, to see there are many amazing programs and mentorship and confidence boosting sessions and all of that. But I think the underlying issue is just, you know, write the check, give women more money, because women are actually really good with money. When you compare some, you know, pieces of research out there done by some really well-renowned research companies, you know, when you compare female founders who raised certain amount of money versus male founders, female founders actually perform better. Return on investment for that money is better than for male founders. So the data is there, the stats are there. We just have to trust women more with money and just give them bigger budgets. If you're an entrepreneur, you know, fund that startup. If you run an organization like mine, you know, sponsor our events, come to our events, support us, become a member, whatever. But ultimately, there needs to be fairer distribution of capital in all ways.
Was this the reason you found your organization, that you wanted to like connect and gather these women?
It actually wasn't, but it came to me later during my journey that actually there's a massive gap when it comes to funding that goes to female founders. So the main reason I started Women in Wearables was just I was trying to solve my own problem. I just wanted to connect with women in wearable tech space. And that was in 2016. And we were like a small group of 10, 15 women. And then throughout the years, we started growing in terms of different sectors and industries we were focusing on. So health tech came into the big picture and femtech as well. And we started getting, you know, women who have corporate careers joining us as members, and women who are investors and journalists, and women who work at different universities and research organizations. So, you know, it's always work in progress when you run an organization like WOW, because you learn so many new things along the way and you pivot and slightly change. But ultimately, I would say, we don't restrict ourselves to be community only for startup founders. We are really welcoming for everyone who wants to learn about these new technologies. But we kept the name purely because it's very convenient to say, for us to say, wow, you know, Women of Wearables. That's why we added off instead of in into the name. And but in terms of focus, we do lots of things. And obviously, we are very welcoming to anyone who wants to learn about wearable tech, health tech and femtech.
That's also, I must ask, that's also how you two know each other, right? Because of the organization. How did that happen?
I mean, I joined it sort of accidentally because somebody was talking about it and saying, you know, I like to get my Women of Wearables newsletter every Monday, which, by the way, anybody listening to this and is interested in femtech needs to ensure that they get this newsletter every Monday. Because it identifies the latest and greatest that's happening within the organization, but also highlights quite a lot of educational support and, you know, some of the things that Maria's already talked about. When I first came to Women of Wearables, though, I was absolutely staggered because I'm not a startup founder. I work in a variety of different areas, and I really just came out of curiosity. And unfortunately, they can't get rid of me now because it's been too long. But I've learned so much from the amount of not just information, you know, like you would expect at a business breakfast where people announced, you know, the projects they're working on, etc., but also people's personal journeys and stories are so very vital and important to what it is that we're trying to do in this groundbreaking community that it has really changed like quite a lot. We have a lot of men who come to Women of Wearables as well. So it's changed a lot of mindsets in terms of how we are literally designing a landscape with which we're going to invest and develop.
And I would say just the importance of community support has become very clear to me since the pandemic started because, you know, we switched all our activities to digital. We were quite heavily focused on London before the pandemic and we had like small pockets of communities in different cities around the world. But actually the importance of community has become even more important during the pandemic. You know, people want to connect with like-minded people. People don't want to talk always about the business and job, you know, what Kelly said. We talk about our personal stories and lives and we share and laugh. And I think it's a very supportive community. And I think that's our biggest asset as organization, you know, the value of the community and people who really see what we are doing and they want to contribute to that ultimately.
Was that always something that was very important for you to personally to connect with other women, or did that kind of the importance grow when you get older? Because for me, it became more important the older I got.
I would say it was always very important to me because I came to London from Croatia 7 years ago. I didn't have any friends. I didn't have any family here. I didn't even have a job. I just followed my husband, who was then my boyfriend, and I knew that I was very lonely, right? You know, being in a tech space, especially as a female founder, can be a very lonely journey, especially if you don't even know whether you want to be a female founder or not. And I would say that it was always very important to me because that immediate circle of people around you who support you can really make a massive difference to your mental health. And there were literally months, I have a small child now, so there were literally months during the pandemic when I wouldn't meet anyone outside the house. You know, I was just doing my, you know, like robot house chores and taking him to nursery and so on. But the highlight of my month would be our monthly meetups where we meet and I get to see 15, 20, 25, 30 new people every Wednesday, first Wednesday of the month. So I think that, you know, community support and just support of like-minded people is something that was always very important to me. And it was the key reason why I started Women of Wearables, just to offer that support to someone and hopefully get that support from someone.
I assume that femtech is, there are more women, more female founders. Yes. I heard somewhere it's 80%, right?
Yeah.
What are the differences between male-led and women-led work environments? Like from your experience?
Well, I've just joined a co-founding group of women who have created an educational platform for children, and it has been founded and it has been invested by 100% women. It's the first time this has ever happened in Switzerland, which is staggering to me. And what I find working with predominantly women I was scared about it, to be honest, because I've come from an all-male background. So I was really not sure of what to expect. Thankfully, I've been a member of Women of Wearables. So I've been able to, over the past couple of years, bed in nicely with working on projects and discussing stuff with women. But it is a real culture change, because suddenly all of that stress and oppression that you feel a little bit sometimes working in a male-dominated industry is completely lifted. And it's really refreshing and beautiful. That said, in Femtech particularly, on my advisory board at Femtech Lab, we definitely need input from men, because for things like fertility and health that affects fertility, it's a 50-50 thing. So we need to know that we have men who are able to be thought leaders and opinion leaders in this space on the same footing as women. Or we can't get those projects and products correct either. But it is very, very refreshing working with women, for sure.
I think that FemTech per se is not alienation of men.
No.
It's, we do need men. Men are part of the problem, but they're part of the solution, right? And as Kelly rightfully said, many healthcare issues that women face in this way or the other are connected to men. Because if you see even my, let's move away from reproductive health, you know, if you look at mental health, my husband is a big part of the solution, right? You know, we are a reflection of people around us to a certain extent, and they are a reflection of us as well. So I think we cannot see female health as such as a very alienated category that affects only women. And that's why I always say that female health, you know, women's health or female health, if we want to be more inclusive, is a public health issue, because it's not, you know, it has to be seen as such. So we do need men as part of solving all these challenges in the industry. We need men to understand female health better. We need men as founders. And I personally know many men who are founders of femtech businesses. We need male investors to understand why they should invest in femtech, and why by not investing in femtech, they're leaving a lot of business opportunities at the table, and so on. So I would say just that, you know, the need for the term femtech came because predominantly more male investors could understand the importance of female health, but as such, exists in this big realm of technology where men should be included too.
Yeah.
What are the big achievements in femtech of the past few years?
I would say awareness, right? There have been some really, really great exits as well. I think we need more exits. I think that, you know, femtech is definitely at a better state, you know, now than where it was in 2017 when we at WOW did our first femtech event. And, you know, when I would say femtech, people would ask me, like, what did you say, fintech? And today, even there are people who don't understand what femtech is. But I think in terms of awareness, we are definitely, you know, there. Media has a major role in this as well. You can see a lot of, you know, stories out there. I write about femtech extensively for Forbes as well. So I think that, you know, things are moving in the right direction. More investors are investing in femtech. I think in 10 years from now, it'll be even better. Kelly, what would you say?
I feel like as a woman that works in technology for the last coming up for 30 years, I feel suddenly supported in a way that I haven't been supported before as a consumer. And so that is everything from being able to buy tampons online, to being able to do a health checkup, do menstrual tracking, maybe find out about fertility, access my own mental health, think about my own perimenopause and postmenopause journey. These things are all very important to women, and they're things that have been completely forgotten over the course of the last 25 years at least. Now we're really starting to feel as though we do have a seat at the table. We just need more seats.
Can you name a few like technologies that have been developed in the past few years that we probably all need and we should know about?
I mean, there's literally a ton. I'm very excited about some new range of non-hormonal contraception, for example, because I think that over the past I don't know, 50 years, you know, women have been told, oh, you know, there are very limited number of contraceptives you can use, and many of them are hormonal, and there are women who don't want to use hormonal contraception, right? So I'm very excited about the new range of contraceptives. I'm very excited in general about maternal health, for example, because we see maternal health as something that, you know, oh, it's there. It happens when you become a parent, and, you know, all the problems that you are facing, that's the way how it has to be. And as Kelly said as well, menopause, right? Like, no one talks about menopause. My mom is, what, 63 now. And when she was going through her menopause, like, you know, yes, she had hot flushes and she had these ton of other challenges and problems, but no one was talking about it. And she just, you know, went with it. And she just accepted that that's the reality of her life for the next 10 years. I think the key here, what I want to say here, is that a lot of problems that women are, you know, challenged by and that they're facing, it doesn't have to be that way. But because if you don't speak about it, if you don't complain about it, if you are not informed, and if your healthcare professional, your doctor or GP is not informed, no one will do anything about it, right? So it's not normal that you have weak pelvic floor and that you, you know, pee, you know, when you shouldn't have to pee and things like that. That's not normal. But we are told that just go with it, right? You know, and that shouldn't be the case. So I'm very hopeful that new solutions in many of these areas that are not only reproductive health, you know, we have amazing femtech solutions in osteoporosis or Alzheimer's or cardiovascular health, will finally, you know, get visibility they deserve. So I'm very excited about, you know, many, many chronic diseases that can be, you know, conditions can be elevated and women can be helped by these solutions. It goes definitely beyond reproductive health.
If we're looking at Swiss-related products, Cordifior is a really great app and community that's focused around women's heart health. And that's very important because it's completely, you know, underrepresented. And that comes from Switzerland, so that's very exciting.
Kelly, you moved to Switzerland. Mm. Is it because Switzerland is such an interesting place for someone working in femtech, or why was that?
I came over here with big dreams. They're still big dreams. But I came here with like some great hopes, and it was very difficult to start with, I think, because you've got to break down a few doors. You have to really get under the skin of Swiss culture. And one of the great things about Swiss culture is at first you discover that people are a little bit close to your crazy ideas, especially if you've got bright purple hair. But then later they take you into their heart. And I think that has been a real eye-opener for me, and that has really helped me to be able to discover and uncover these fantastic apps, this fantastic infrastructure that we have of supporting each other, and, you know, with underlying solid structures like Microsoft for Startups in Switzerland and Accenture, we're really starting now to have this wonderful golden age, I think, in Switzerland of innovation. And so that makes me want to stay longer, and I've decided that it is going to be my home now. You're stuck with me.
That would be such like the best phrase to end this conversation. Golden age for Switzerland. And I wish we had more time, but we're getting to an end. But before we say goodbye, I have some short questions for you, and I would like to answer them both. First, what is the best thing about being a woman?
I would say you have a very unique way of looking at things. And there's definitely a difference between female and male brains. From my recent past, obviously becoming a mom, you know, birth is something that when you go through that, it changes you forever. So I think that being a parent in general is life-changing experience. But going through a journey of pregnancy and birth is beyond anything I've done before. So I have much greater appreciation for my body ever since I became parent. I have to say that. Or for any woman who has gone through the same, because it really is a massive thing. So yeah, kudos to all birthing parents.
I was going to say the same. One of the best things about being a woman is the upgrade of being a man. We can do so much more. We're such great multitaskers, and we have an inherent ability to see into the future by the things that are closest to us. We're prepared always.
What would be better as a guy?
I prefer to be a woman, actually. I agree with Kelly. I think women are super, you know, humans.
Honestly. But maybe something would be easier or just better. I don't know. Maybe if there's nothing, then...
It might be easier for some things, right? You know, very often, you know, men are taken more seriously when they sit at a table. And for them, just mentally, it's easier in certain situations. Men will apply for a job if they have, if they tick 50% of all the boxes for the, at the job application. I won't. I'm always very like 100%. I need to be 100% sure I can do something before I even start doing it. So, but it might be just different, you know, individual mindset as well. I would complain not to have my period every month. I have to say that. So that's one of the things, you know, that I do sometimes envy guys a bit, especially I think for women who suffer from endometriosis. I think it's a very painful condition that unfortunately is tied to your menstrual health. So, but in general, no, I would always rather be a woman.
Yeah, since the age of 4, when I was asked what I wanted to do with my life by my grandfather, I have always said I wanted to be successful. And I think it doesn't really, I don't think that's a gender-focused situation. I think you are the only person that stands in the way of your own success. It doesn't matter whether you're a guy or a girl. Certainly, you know, I wouldn't switch with being a guy. I've been able to do so much more and better than most men in my peer group and class have been able to. So, yay. Go, girls.
Girl power.
What are you proud of?
As the time goes, as I'm getting older, I'm more prouder of small things that I achieve, right? You know, I don't see my life as one big picture, as because in the grand scheme of things, it's super important, the little things that you do. So I'm proud of, you know, of the work I've done in this space. I'm proud of the company and business I've built. I'm proud of, you know, juggling everything on private and business end. And I think I'm proud that I myself have improved in so many areas. I think I always try to compare myself to previous me rather than other people. I never actually compare myself to other people because I think everyone's life is very individual and unique. So I'm proud of what I have achieved and who I've become, but I'm actually even, I think I'll be even prouder in the years to come because I always try to be, you know, better version of myself. So that's my small micro universe, I would say.
I'm proud of all that I've achieved and I'm proud of more that I want to accomplish. Being able to learn from myself has been one of my greatest challenges, but also one of the things that I have felt the happiest about. And finding myself as well has been a really important part of that. So, you know, without sounding too selfish, I think being able to find the kindness in myself and other people is one of the qualities that I'm most proud of.
Mm. And what is the thing you'd wish you'd known before?
That's a really good question. I would say that, you know, it's not easy to be a grown-up and an adult, but... life is a journey, I would say. You know, life is not a destination. Life is a journey, at least for me. So I think that, you know, as Kelly said, be kind to yourself. I wish I was kinder to myself in my maybe 20s and early 30s. But, you know, you live, you learn. I just think that, you know, the biggest lesson that I've learned is just, you know, you live, you have to live in now. You cannot live in the past because that's the past time. You cannot live in the future because you know what the future will be. You can plan, but you make plans and God is laughing at you. So I think just living in the now, that's the lesson that I've learned.
I wish somebody had told me how expensive Switzerland would be to go out for a glass of wine or a meal.
You could have asked me. I would have told you.
I mean, come on, this fondue index is just too much. But seriously, I think the thing that I wish, you know, I'd learned sort of before anything is to not wait.
Mm-hmm.
You know, too many times in my career and in my life, I've waited for someone else to go first to see whether it's okay. But actually, now that I'm much older, if I was to talk to my 16-year-old self, I would say, just go and do it. You know, nobody is judging you, and who cares if they are?
That's a good answer. So what is the thing you do when you need to take a rest from what you do?
Kelly, you go with this one first.
Oh, gosh, okay. Well, anytime I introduce myself at Women of Wearables, aside of being a sort of outsider, I always sort of list out all of the things that I do. And then Maria will usually remind me, by the way, you write novels as well. And so I think that's the thing that I do to sort of take my mind away from what I do in my day to day is I write crime novels and science fiction novels. And I really enjoy writing. It's one of the most freeing pastimes that I can possibly do. That and ballroom dancing.
And ballroom dancing?
Yeah.
Okay. What is it for you, Maria?
Well, I spend a lot of time with my son. He's three. So, you know, puzzles, Peppa Pig books and all of that kind of stuff is part of my everyday journey with him. You can learn a lot from small children, for sure. I'm recently become a lot into minimalism, for example. I'm not there yet myself, but I see it as a very interesting movement and actually something that I already incorporated in my life in different areas, because as your to-do list gets longer, which mine does, you have to simplify your life in so many levels. So I would definitely recommend this to anyone who feels overburdened and super busy like myself, because I don't want to be busier in the years to come, but I want to live more simpler, calmer life. And I think, you know, reducing clutter in all areas of your life, whether it's digital clutter or physical clutter, is definitely something I'm keen to pursue more. But it's a very interesting movement. I would recommend everyone to Google it or read about it a bit.
I've got one last question, and that's, how can people reach out to you if they want to get in touch, or if they want to be part of Women of Wearables or work with you? How can they reach out?
First of all, you should do it. You have to join Women of Wearables. That is the super most important thing.
Oh, thank you, Kelly. I mean, I'm everywhere. Right? That's the nature of my job. So they can find me on LinkedIn. They can contact us through our website. They can drop us an email. I'm on Twitter as well. They can join our meetups as well. Even if they are not a member, they want to meet the community, we have that option as well. So first Wednesday of the month, they can just join us. All the events are listed on our website. So, they are very responsive. I try to get back to everyone who reaches out if I have time, because I met some incredible people just by answering to their emails. So happy to connect with anyone who wants to reach out.
And how can they reach out to you, Kelly?
Again, like Maria, I'm everywhere, Yvonne. So you can find me on LinkedIn, Twitter. Actually, they're the only socials that I'm doing at the moment, because I seem to have destroyed my... I seem to have gone minimalist and Marie Kondo on my social media.
So it's Twitter and LinkedIn.
Just Twitter and LinkedIn now. But yeah, I mean, you will easily find me walking around the streets of any Swiss city. I am the person that looks the weirdest. So please stop me in the street also.
The purple hair.
Purple hair. Yeah. Crazy clothes.
Thank you so much. That was such an interesting talk. And I'm really happy I had you both as my guests. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
That was another episode of Female Future. If you want to discover more female icons, trendsetters, and pioneers, join us again for another talk with two outstanding women. Female Future is part of Women of Switzerland, which is a collaboration of the Embassy of Switzerland in the UK and the Embassy of Switzerland in Israel. This is a podcast highlighting the 50th anniversary of female suffrage in Switzerland. And if you want to learn more, visit wakeupnow.ch.